God is the one that's offered by the great American theologian Woody Allen, who once said that maybe God does exist, but he's an underachiever. Imagine being omnipotent and producing this, right? Tornadoes, plagues, fascists, all these things. Well, what is to be done? Three short points, then I'll sign off. The immediate goals that we might consider worth struggling for. First, we have to get the religionists off welfare. Make the rich churches and the multimillionaire TV evangelists pay a fair share of taxes on their immense holdings and investments. We have to get their hands, their loving, beseeching hands, we have to get those hands out of our pockets. Stop this theocratic rule where the state forces us to subsidize them in their propagandizing of their faith, which is a violation of our beliefs and a violation of the Constitution that is using the state in that way. Not propagating their faith, they can do that. Second, free thinkers, liberation theologists, atheists, agnostics, etc. should have equal time on television. I just wrote a book called Inventing Reality, which deals with the way that political ideas and information are controlled by the news media, but the same thing could be said about creed. Alternative views are systematically shut out. Dissident opinions get no hearing. I mean, occasionally a local radio show, Madeline Murray O'Hare will be interviewed or someone else like that, but for the most part, you could just see that it's not a non-secular TV. Dissident opinions get no hearing. There's no free market of ideas. Third, we must roll back Reaganism and its war against the First Amendment and its war against the separation of church and state and against our freedom and our beliefs. And that we can... And I think the Reaganites have been weakened by the Iran-Contra scandal, and so there are new opportunities for us to fight back. Not just to complain, but to fight back. And not to feel that they're all so powerful and they're so dangerous. Not, they're dangerous, it's true. But you have to do what the great Italian communist Antonio Gramsci once said. And what Madeline Murray O'Hare practiced, even though I bet she didn't read Gramsci on this point. He said, you must have a pessimism of the mind, be able to see the worst, the dangers, and an optimism of the will to fight back and know that there are victories that we could win and more of them will be ours. Even though some of us may not realize it, we are part of very much of a long historical struggle. We are involved in making history, just a little bit of it, maybe a paragraph was made right out there today. To those who would make the world safe for hypocrisy, we say that our country needs something more than freedom of religion. We need freedom of belief, including the freedom not to believe in spirits and demons without putting our jobs and civil liberties at risk. Our historic task is not to vanquish religion, but to vanquish theocracy, I think, and with it, all the abuses and privileges upon which it feeds. This, ladies and gentlemen, would be, and it will be, a great victory for humanity and for democracy. Thank you.
That was an archival speech by Michael Parenti on Theocracy versus Democracy, The Political Uses of Religion. He was recorded in Denver, Colorado on April 12, 1987, at the American Atheist National Convention. With roots in a working-class Italian district of New York City and a PhD in political science from Yale, Michael Parenti is an internationally known writer and lecturer. He's the author of 23 books. Please find a pen to write down a phone number to call to find out how to order the extended version of this speech, a 45-minute CD of Michael Parenti on the political uses of religion. This program is also available as film on DVD. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. For links to Michael Parenti's website and more information, TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD or DVD order keeps this program on the air. You can find a free download of the 29-minute version of this talk on TUC Radio's website or call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. My name is Maria Gleiden. Thank you for listening.
little bit late, but here at last. It's Bathurst Piers Broadsides coming at you for the next 2 hours. That's Civil Rights on the Streets, Civil Rights for the Poor. And this evening, an in-depth examination, if the examiners show up, of recent issues at City Council around the Dolphin Lee Project, including a special taped sort of after session after a hot City Council meeting, and some detailed analysis of that, hopefully by some pointed callers. Today is January 27th, 2000. Stay with us. And welcome to Bathurst Spear's Broadsides. I'm your host, Bathurst Spear Robert Norse, and you are tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, on your FM dial. You can contact the studio at 427-3772 if you want to be a part of the action. And we're going to also be continuing our playing of Phil Oakes, call them the Lost Tapes. He's the folk singer who died tragically in the mid-70s by his own hand. Beautiful voice, strong political lyrics, kind of stuff I love. And a lot of these cuts are from the Vaults of Broadsides, the record folk song folks in New York City that never really got out. They were saved by his brother and sister, and I got them through Mark Levy, who's a folk singer in his own right. We're going to hear some of that. In fact, we're going to begin with a Phil Oakes song, and periodically throughout the next 2 hours, we're going to break up things with Phil Oakes. So let's begin breaking things up.
Okay, I want to do these two songs here. That's the way it's going to be. It's the same, the original Nolan Keaton that I took, make the reference off of. Off of Breaking It.
If you say all the good times are gone, if you say this rain will keep raining on, I'll walk along with my head held high. I'll find a song and I'll sing it to the sky. I may be wrong, but I'll live till I die. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Even though you say, reach the door. Though you say, hard times knock at my door. Though you say, I'll never smile anymore. I just imagine that I'm 10 feet tall. Then if I try, I can climb the highest wall. It doesn't matter if I slip down and fall. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Even though you say, reach the end of my road. Though you say my tides are all running low, it's been so long since I tried to frown, that old man trouble will never get me down. It's all that easy when you know where you're bound. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Just you wait and see.
even though you stay. Stay here, even though you stay. All the good times are gone. Though you say this rain will keep raining on. I'll walk along with my head held high. I'll find that song and I'll sing it to the sky. I may be wrong, but I'll live till I die. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Just you wait and see.
And there he was, Phil Oakes. Again, call-in number is 427-3772, and now let's get down to the meat of things. Before we get to the real fireworks outside on that fateful city council meeting two nights ago, on January 25th, we have to look at the fireworks that happened inside the council chambers, where Phil Bear was actually evicted from the council by order of Mayor Keith Sugar. Phil Bear is a landlord and activist in the Beach Flats, who has been particularly concerned, as have I and others, with a project called the Dolphin and Lee Apartment. What we call it, replacement, demolition, acquisition project. This is an affordable housing project being pushed by former Mayor Catherine Byers. Perhaps we would call her the shadow mayor on this issue, since she seems to wield the power, her position anyway. These are two apartment complexes filled with low-income Hispanic residents who probably could get housing nowhere else in town at this time, because they kind of cram in there, I'm told. And again, I haven't been to the Dolphin Lee inside. I've been to the outside, and I've spoken to some of the residents outside just in the course of things over the last year, but not recently. I understand hunger faster Roxana Kistapache is writing a story for Street Spirit, and she is in fact interviewing Dolphin Lee residents for that story, and will hopefully have that information for us perhaps on Sunday if she's strong enough to talk. She's fasting and is in fact now in, I guess, the 16th day of her fast, 15th or 16th day, on the issue of the city council's doing something to implement the safe zones resolution of the Homeless Issues Task Force, or to end the sleeping and camping bans, or suspend them pending the establishment of safe zones, to take action to do something along those lines. Why is this related to Dolphin Lee? Well, it's related to Dolphin Lee because the concern of a lot of people is that the eviction of these hundreds of Hispanic people will leave them ultimately homeless. And the project is being pushed by, as I said, Catherine Byers. It's a sort of a, it comes from the days of the beach area plan, the plan that was so decisively defeated last election. But in this aspect of it, at least, is still with us now. You know, a year and a half later, or a year and a quarter later, and apparently proceeding like a juggernaut. At least this is my perspective. These are two apartment complexes that, again, offer the only affordable housing for these folks, and they're being attacked as substandard. They're being essentially, the scene is being set for eminent domaining these properties, or buying them. The sellers, the people who own the property, two different owners have hitherto said they're not interested in selling. At least that's my understanding. But the city council has been pushing this project anyway and has identified Mercy Housing, sort of a nonprofit housing developer, of which has a certain controversial nature. Mercy Housing is connected with a larger Catholic Charities group that has been acquiring hospitals and then eliminating their birth control and their abortion provisions, family planning services. And again, the question of that is also entered into this issue in the minds of some of us. We may have our analyst may have arrived in the studio. Better late than never. That's Scott Graham, who was also at the city council meeting. And Scott was a speaker at the mic, and we're going to hear Phil Bear talking on this issue at the public comment period. What was the issue? I'm really glad Scott has arrived, because there were actually several issues that on two separate points on the agenda. One was for the Redevelopment Agency, which is the major body carrying this Dolphin Lee project, and the Redevelopment Agency is really the city council, which is sort of composes itself as a group of people that are supposedly, their primary concern is, has to do with providing affordable housing. I'm going to ask Scott to join me as I flounder with some of this stuff. Have a seat, Scott. Let me get your mic on here. Say something for us.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
A little louder.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. Glad to have you with us. Scott, you're an activist with the community. You're, of course, familiar to a lot of folks who are listening because they know you personally or because they've heard you on the show. But you've been a regular watcher of City Council, person concerned with low-income and affordable housing, and one might even call it a civil rights issue or existence issue for those who are in housing that is in the way of a project, whether here or San Francisco or anywhere else, that's about to kind of consume them. For the layman, explain what was on the agenda of City Council last Tuesday.
Well, what was on the agenda last Tuesday was a plan to have a public participation program put into order, and so that the public could comment on this proposal and stuff. But instead of, you know, the real question here is, why isn't this public process to come up with a plan? Instead of a public process to try to buy into a plan, or a public process to try to sell a plan.
Well, let's take a step back again, because folks, they hear the words Dolphin Lee and their eyes glaze over. What does that mean? These are two apartment complexes that the city wants to buy or force the sellers to sell to them. They want to destroy the apartment complexes, move the people out, build some spiffy newer things with about what the same amount of room space. Or probably less, considering that folks are probably in there pretty tightly. Number of families to,
That's one of the questions that they're supposed to be answering in their relocation plan, is exactly how many people are living there, and then, you know, what their needs will be to give them what they consider adequate housing. Because that's one of the issues, I mean, one of the reasons that they state for doing this in the first place is that they want to alleviate overcrowding.
Right. We hear a lot about substandard beach flats housing, and a lot of this, you know, I mean, certainly housing in all parts of the city can be fixed up, and beach flats, and in many ways, you know, it's not the West Side housing, which is, you know, spacious lawns and so forth. It's often very, you know, there's smaller rooms. I presume folks, to some extent, there's often probably overcrowding going on. I mean, is this a fair thing to say? I haven't spent, as I said, any time inside the Dolphin Lee. Have you been inside the Dolphin Lee?
No, not for many years. I mean, I was in one of the rooms there many years ago. I mean, most of the places in the Dolphin and the Lee property are either studio apartments or one-bedroom apartments. I think there may be a couple of two-bedroom apartments, but it's primarily studios and one-bedroom apartments.
Mm-hmm. Now, these apartments, there was, of course, a plan a year and a half ago to invest massive amounts of city money, take over large pieces of property, give some of that to the Seaside Company to develop and expand, change the zoning. There's a whole big plan that was essentially thrown out or put on hold or to be rethought by the voters because of the 1998 elections. What was the Dolphin Lee in project in any way on the horizon at that point, Scott?
Well, the Dolphin Lee was actually around before the Beach South of Laurel plan. It was this low-income housing provider, Mercy, had this plan probably 3 or 4 years ago. And then as the Beach South of Laurel plan started progressing, they realized that that wasn't really the greatest site, that if they were going to do the Third Street realignment, that they would actually need part of that property to do this realignment. And even though, I mean, if they build the thing they're doing now, they could still do the Third Street realignment anyway. They just have to have a slight curve in it. Mm-hmm. But so the low-income housing that was proposed in the Beach South of Laurel was in a different spot. It wasn't where the Dolphin Lee is, even though the Lee property would have been completely taken by the Third Street realignment, and part of the Dolphins property would have been taken, which probably would have meant they would have taken down both of those structures.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that a very significant thing in this whole discussion politically was that one of the largest groups of, if not the largest, probably the largest group of Latino Hispanic people to come to city council and oppose the Beach South of Laurel plan in substantial numbers, what, 80 people, something like that, at the Civic Center, Civic Auditorium hearing?
Yeah, there was like 75 to 80 people that came. And
they came from mostly from the Dolphin Lee Project, right?
Well, I'd say probably 75% of them came from the Dolphin Lee Project, you know, the Dolphin Lee complexes. And
now, were they concerned about the redevelopment of their area? Were they concerned they were going to get thrown out at that point, or were they just opposed to the other people getting thrown out?
Well, at least the Lee property, that apartment building would have been demolished under the Beach South of Laurel plan. The Dolphin, it was questionable whether they were going to tear it down or not, even though a part of that lot was needed for the Third Street realignment. Whether or not they were going to demolish the building wasn't really ever explained in the plan. But
certainly the fact
that the Lee property was going to be demolished.
The spectacle of residents standing up and saying, please don't demolish our home, I think had a significant impact on the electorate, on the council. And one might also, some have suggested it had a serious impact on some of the more kind of determined council members who wanted this project, like Michael Hernandez, who and Scott Kennedy at that time. Did he not sort of cast sort of the finger of suspicion on the folks who were at the hearing, the Dolphin Lee folks, saying, well, they're all from this one address? Was that Kennedy? Was that Hernandez? I'm not sure who said that.
I think both of them at different times, at different dates, said that, because there was, at one time, there was that march outside of City Hall during one of the public hearings. You know, it was before the big public hearings that were held at the Civic Center, but one of the smaller public hearings they were holding on it, there was like a march outside, a bunch of people from the beach flats, and I believe at that time Hernandez said, well, all these people are just from one place. And then at the Civic Center, I believe it was Scott Kennedy that pointed that out to the audience that didn't realize it.
And I guess the point here was to sort of impugn the credibility of all these folks saying, well, they're being managed by the owners somehow, or by the manager, or by political forces who don't want this project to go forward, to kind of create the impression that there's hardship being proposed and that there's real genuine public sentiment against it, when in fact it's simply some sort of misrepresentation and manipulation of the residents. What's your reaction to that argument?
Well, one of the funny things is that this woman, Maria Gutierrez, helped organize to get, because she manages the Dolphin property, the Dolphin apartment, and she organized the people not only in her, helped organize the people in her building and the building next door, along with the Western Service workers and a few other local people like Phil Bear and Jane Bear, helped organize these people along with a few other Latinos around the neighborhood. And now, and the council then looked at her as this wicked landlord type, even though she was just the property manager, not the landlord. And now the new council looks at her exactly the same way. It's not like they don't look at her as being somebody that did them a great service by getting all these people out to show there was no buy-in by the Latinos down there. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, she's looked at the same way. And so anytime this issue comes up, the first meeting in the Beach Flats they held after the election, there was a bunch of people from the...
What month was that, Scott?
That was last spring. I think it was March or April or something.
Mm-hmm.
But
they held that in the community trailer?
The community trailer in Beach Flats. But anyway, probably 50, 60 people from both of those projects came out and were opposed to having their housing torn down to build better housing. Many of them said they would like to have better housing, but they're all opposed to having it torn down. You know, and they had a lot of other suggestions for ways to make the neighborhood better.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were at that meeting yourself?
Yes. And Tim Fitzmaurice said several times at that meeting that there was no Dolphin Lee project, because all of them were speaking out against the Dolphin Lee project, because somehow this paper had gotten out to the public that...
But there was a project before SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, the group that elected the new council members, that specifically talked in its housing committee meetings about this project. I guess Elizabeth Vogel of Mercy Housing, Andy Schifrin showed up at those SCAN meetings pushing the project as the affordable housing jewel of the year, right?
Basically, yeah. And so once all this got out, then they held a meeting in the Beach Flats. Tim denied to these people that there was a project.
Councilmember Fitzmaurice.
Tim Fitzmaurice denied that there was going to be a Dolphin Lee, that there was a Dolphin Lee project. And so then they held a second meeting in the Beach Flats. I think it was in October or September or something. And there was hardly anybody from the neighborhood there. And there was maybe five Latinos in the audience and then like a dozen political activists in the audience.
And you said also literature about the Dolphin Lee on the table and all in English?
All in English. They claimed that they were going to have some out in Spanish by the city council meeting when they discussed the Dolphin Lee at the city council meeting.
I didn't see any of that literature on Tuesday night, no.
No, well, no. I mean, this was months ago, so it was like at a meeting they held months ago. They're going to have it available in Spanish by then. And to my knowledge, from speaking to people, it isn't available even to this date.
But I guess the point you were making to me several days ago, and I guess it may come out on this tape, and I'm sorry we're delaying the tape, but I think the background is important for those of you who don't know these issues, that Dolphin Lee residents who came to the first meeting after the election to tell the politicians involved they didn't want this project were told there was no such project, so they didn't come back to the second meeting. Is that your point?
Yes, yeah. They didn't come back to the second meeting that was at the trailer because supposedly the second meeting was just on low-income housing in the Beach Flats. They had five different scenarios they were looking at. Well, the city council picked the only scenario that meant they had to relocate people.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, the scenarios were kind of set up so that that was the scenario to pick, as I understand it. Again, leading one to wonder about the staff that created those scenarios. I know that we can probably talk about that in more detail, but again, a lot of folks genuinely want affordable housing. I mean, there is this sort of...
Oh, I'm not against affordable housing.
Of course,
I'm just
so
against,
am I.
I'm against forced relocation.
And the other thing is, and I guess the point that I wanted to make, was that these Dolphin Lee residents who came out so adamantly against the Beach South of Laurel plan then became the target of the next redevelopment project. Of course, you might say it wasn't, you know, as a specific punishment for what they did necessarily, but it was the resurrection of a prior plan that had been there before, you were saying.
Right.
But in fact, it had the effect of saying to people, perhaps, one might look at it this way, you stand up against city council, we're going to take your house.
that happened to me during the Beach South of Laurel era. My house got red tagged by the...
Did that have anything to do with your political activism? Or?
Well, it was already in the works before then, but I think that sped the process along, possibly.
The other question I have for you again is, on this particular day, Tuesday, 2 days ago, the city council came back with two items on its agenda. One had to do with this project area committee, which apparently is required by law, or if you listen to Keith Sugar, no, it's not, because there's this loophole, that loophole, and only at the inception of the project and so forth, and that we can talk about that. The second item had to do with establishing consultants to further some sort of relocation plan.
Well, there was two items. The one was this advisory committee that Mercy Housing is setting up. It's basically just a dog and pony show, but it's an advisory committee to help them design and work out, you know, the details of this project.
So it's not a project area committee as envisaged by the law in terms of where affordable housing is, shall we say, seriously impacting people who already live there, and they are invited or required to be invited into the process.
You know, it's not. It's nothing like the thing they're setting up is basically a sham. The list of organizations and people that they are going to have be represented here, most of them have never had anything to do with Beach Flats, and the ones that have know who they are and should stand up and request that they're involved and also show this whole thing to be a sham.
Well, it was a really kind of hurried council session because of the shoulder tap law. Some items didn't even get discussed. One item was on the afternoon agenda about the Dolphin League. The other item was on the redevelopment agency agenda. And this actual conversation we're about to hear, that is to say the public input we're about to listen to, came up during the redevelopment agency discussion.
Well, this was actually, they had to declare it a joint meeting of the city council and the redevelopment agency.
Such was their eagerness to get through
this. Because they were combining both things, because they knew there was a bunch of people that wanted to talk against it. And so instead of giving them 3 minutes two different times, they gave them 3 minutes once. And because there was two items, so they combined them together.
So again, the two items had to do with Mercy Housing's, what you would call, sham advisory committee.
Right.
And the second one was?
Well, the second one was basically dispelling the myth that they needed a project area committee and looking into setting up a relocation sort of committee or relocation task force.
Weren't consultants involved in this, paying off consultants at some point? Because I remember reading.
They'd bring in consultants to work out the relocation plan.
Consultants paid by city council.
Paid by out of redevelopment.
And hired by?
Redevelopment.
Redevelopment. This is, again, the agency that's pushing the plan.
Right.
Now,
which it is, the city council is technically the redevelopment agency. But basically, the redevelopment agency has a life of its own. Seal Cirillo heads the redevelopment agency, and she doesn't really answer to anyone except the city council when they're acting as the redevelopment agency, which is usually a half an hour every 2 weeks.
And they rely heavily on her analysis and her opinions, right?
Right. And the problem that I really see, you know, part of the need for a project area committee arises out of the fact that redevelopment agencies can get out of control. They have a lot of power. They can take over people's properties, tear down people's houses. And when they have that much power, there has to be citizen oversight. And that's what the project area committee does. And with every other city department, there is some sort of citizen oversight. We finally even got it for the police department, even though it lacks a lot of teeth. But the redevelopment agency has no form of citizen oversight.
Redevelopment rules, man.
Right. There should be at least a commission, just like the planning commission oversees the planning department. There should be at least a commission of citizens that oversee the redevelopment agency.
You don't trust Seal Cirillo, is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, I just think citizen oversight is actually, you know, a much better way to get things done than to have just these plans come forward with no citizen review process.
We're about to listen to the oral communication during the public comment during that item. Before we do, can you tell us what in fact the speakers are responding to? You're going to hear the speakers responding, but what had been said by the council members, and I'm not including that in this because of time limitations. By the way, I have invited both Mayor Sugar and Tim Fitzmaurice to be on this show. Neither of them have returned my calls, and should any of them be listening to this program, you're welcome to call in and to join this discussion, or to, you are. I mean, I want there to be an open discussion, as I think all of us do. And that's, in fact, I think what caused some of the rage at the council meeting on Tuesday night, that there wasn't an open discussion. You mentioned that the time was cut in half by this fancy finagling of items. I want to also add that I noted they suddenly changed what was going to be discussed at what time as everyone was leaving the chamber. And I had to run out and say, Dolphin Lee is being discussed. Dolphin Lee is being discussed, because they had said something else was being discussed. I think they said they were going to adjourn.
They were going to adjourn and do everything else from the afternoon later.
And they suddenly decided not to after everybody had left. Now, I mean, you know, you might say, well, they were still thrashing it around. They were innocent. They had no ulterior motives. But they didn't understand that a lot of the public would be disenfranchised here because of what they'd said before, just as it was when a lot of the public came back at 7 o'clock to continue the meeting with the normal oral communication in the evening and found the doors were closed and that the thing had been postponed until 7:45, and oral communication didn't happen until 9 that night. So what happened right before this public discussion of the Dolphin League? What so upset the speakers?
Well, they were basically, the city council was discussing this advisory committee that Mercy Housing has set up, and they were discussing whether that would be an adequate body to actually be also the relocation committee. And so they would not only advise on how to build the project, they would also advise on how to relocate.
Wait a minute, if the Germans can relocate the Jews, I mean, they can do both at the same time, right? I mean, it kind of serves for efficiency. You have Mercy Housing raising the building and building its building and doing the relocating. It seems to be I'm being sarcastic, folks. Let's get into this actual the public discussion. The first voice you'll hear will be that of Phil Baer.
Please leave your comments for 3 minutes.
Relocation plan. Units, interview the people, how many people. We're confusing already here between replacement units and some sort of provision for these specific individuals. Observe rigid formalities, quote unquote, Mayor Sugar. Procedure for formation, A, the legislative body of a city or county shall call upon the residents and existing community organizations in a redevelopment project area to form a project area committee in either of the following situations. The first one named, a substantial number of low-income persons or moderate-income persons or both reside within the project area, and the redevelopment plan as adopted will contain authority for the agency to acquire by eminent domain property on which any persons reside. You have clearly stated that you have such eminent domain authority. How can we conceivably interpret that so as to not require a project area committee?
Let me just answer that really quickly. The law says that...
It's interesting here, Scott, that Mayor Sugar responds to Phil Baer's question, of course, cutting into his time at the mic, as he does. It's not usually customary to respond during the public comment section, is it?
No, but what happened here was that before this conversation, before the public comment part of this happened, Keith said Mayor Sugar said he had checked the law out himself and read it, and see, him being a lawyer, he read the thing and decided that there was a loophole that they didn't have to form a project area committee.
I see. So this is, and so he was kind of taking the opportunity to loophole his way into the discussion of Phil Baer. Let's hear some more of what Phil said.
That, yes, that is one of the situations in which a project area committee is required at the time of the inception of the plan or at the time of an amendment of the plan. We're well beyond project adoption, and no project amendment is a part of this.
What's your comment on that, Scott, before we return to Phil's statement? Mayor Sugar is saying that a project area committee is not required except at the inception of the plan or the time of amendment of the plan.
Well, the plan was amended when the Beach South Laurel plan was adopted. And they're going to use the Beach South Laurel Environmental Impact Report as part of this project, I can bet you anything. And so if they use that document as part of this project, that's admitting that they're using an amended plan in order to do this. So they're using it. So just because the old city council that adopted the Beach South Laurel plan didn't create a project area committee, which a lot of people were pushing at that time, doesn't mean that the need still doesn't exist. Because as Phil pointed out, when they identify a project that will relocate primarily low and moderate income people, they have to set one up. It doesn't matter if the redevelopment agency has been around for 30 years.
It sounds like Mayor Sugar is looking for a loophole. Is that a fair assessment?
I would say so. I think the redevelopment agency and the city council as a whole is looking for a loophole.
Is this Sugar, or is this the person who I think is really behind this project, Catherine Byers, who's the one who really kind of pushed it through several months ago?
Well, her and Bernice Belton, who lives next door to the Elizabeth Vogel, who runs Mercy Charities.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting some sort of improper relationship here?
Well, I just think there's a lot of back scratching going on in this project.
Let's hear what Phil Baer has to say.
You're quoting T. Brent Hawkins, the very person you were bad mouthing to me the other day. The intent of the law is to empower the people likely to get directly impacted when a redevelopment agency identifies a project that is going to throw low-income people out of their houses. that is the clear intention and purpose of that law. To use this trip where you got away with it 10 years ago, and then you got away with it again 5 years ago, so you're scot-free, like some sort of statute of limitations applied, is sleazy. There is a law that is a valid law, an understandable law, a necessary law, the only provision to protect people against what is otherwise an awesome, powerful process with a known history of hurting low-income people. This is the one provision to mitigate against that inherent potential for abuse. And you're giving me this legal rigmarole. You're avoiding that law in the... It couldn't be clearer. Would you build this project even if it became quite obvious that most of the people in and around that project didn't want the project? Answer me that one. It appears to me that you would. Do you think that the process that's being set up here through Mercy, this advisory committee, this rigged advisory committee, is going to give you an accurate sense of what the people in and around that project want? Do you think that setting up the developer as the person who identifies the people who are going to be in the advisory committee is ever going to come up with anything less than a ringing endorsement of the project? Is this actually being presented as some sort of a substitute for a real project area committee? It's a travesty.
Good evening, Fred Geiger. That might be a little hard for me to follow. I'll do my best. Some points made there, though. First of all, I do want to state that I recognize the good intentions of everyone on this council. They want to do something positive for some needy people in our community and improve the community as a whole. I'm not opposed to a low-income rental housing project in the Beach Flats area. I want to make those real clear. But let's do the best possible job we can and making this a good project, not just, well, we got to do a project. Let's do the best we can so we can be proud of it afterwards and not say, boy, that was a screwed up mess. We should have done better. Let's not bury our head in the sand just to push this ahead. Let's recognize the input of the community here. And the committee has the ability to make this a better plan because, you know, we don't have the expertise, but the more heads are basically better, and there's a lot of people here who have given this a lot of thought, and they want a good project. As was mentioned earlier, I think maybe the first thing we need to do before we go anywhere with this is find out how many residents will not qualify to be back in this new project. We need to have a hard number because of either immigration status or because of financial ability. And then we have to decide what number is okay. If it's 80% that aren't going to get back in, we'll probably say that's not too good. If it's 20%, I don't know where to draw the line. But I think before you go any further, that's a question you need to be able to answer.
Scott, let's stop and respond. Give me your thoughts on Fred Geiger's question. What percentage of the people are going to be eligible to get back into this housing, even with the most, let's say, rigorous relocation ordinance passed by the city possible? Because I know later on we're going to hear Mayor Sugar promising Phil Baer, he's going to himself put forward a law that will make sure every single person gets back in. What right now? What do you think are the odds? Who's going to get back in? What are the percentages? And do you have any? You know?
I would say the percentages are probably going to be somewhere between 10% and 20% will get back in.
You say that based on
Just other projects that have happened around town. Whenever,
such as,
well, Nary's Lagoon. When they first built Nary's Lagoon, they had another thing that was similar to the Beach South Laurel plan, that they were trying to do this boardwalk deal. And so they originally built Nary's Lagoon so they could move a bunch of people out of Beach Flats. When they got it built, there was some lawsuit by some watchdog group from somewhere else in the state of California that sued the city for not opening up the process of who gets into the housing project to everybody.
Because federal money was involved?
Because federal and state money were involved.
Now, would federal money be involved with the Dolphin Lee project?
Right, yes, because the city only has I think it's a $2.4 million contribution to this project.
And how much is required for the Dolphin League?
They're estimating about $12 million.
Well, perhaps they could get it by spare changing on the mall.
Or spare changing from the developer of the police station.
That might help. But the point is, you're saying, though, that, kidding aside, the federal funding is presumably part of the ground plan for this, right?
Oh, yeah. They expect to get, probably at least a third of the money, or maybe closer to half the money for the project from the Fed.
Now, another point raised by Fred Geiger is the question of whether people will be eligible because of their immigrant status, or whether legal, illegal, or otherwise. And I know that there was some flyer being circulated by the redevelopment agency or perhaps the city council in the spring that caused some controversy. We talked about it here on Free Radio on this show, sort of implying that everybody who wanted to get relocation money would not be prohibited from doing so because of their immigration status. And I believe you told me at that time you thought this was not accurate.
Well, I don't think it is, because there was a federal ruling, as far as I know, that actually caused a lot of people to lose their federal housing nationwide, where if you aren't legally in this country, you cannot live in federal subsidized housing. You have to be a legal immigrant in order to be in federally subsidized housing.
So we got two strikes already then. One is, if any federal funding is involved, everybody in the country has to be given access to this opportunity to get into the Dolphin League when the actual thing is built and its vacancies are available. And then secondly, the people who are being relocated may not even be the funding may not be available for them because of immigration restrictions if they do not have all their papers in order.
Right.
Now, is that true even if the money comes from the city council?
Well, if it was totally funded by the city with no state or federal money, they could make up the rules.
What about the relocation part of it? Is it likely the city council could say, okay, let's make sure that these folks are protected by paying it all out of our funding? Could they do that?
Well, they could, but it would basically take up most of the, their estimate right now is that it would cost between $1.2 and $2.1 million to relocate everybody for 42 months.
So what I'm looking for is a scenario that they could say, well, we are going to take all this on, we'll answer all these problems and proceed, because my estimate has been that they don't have such an answer, even theoretically possible, and therefore that there is a fundamental deception going on here. That's been my concern. Let's hear some more, because I know we're going to lose you soon, because you're off, in fact, hopefully to meet with these same city council members at one of those backroom smoky meeting rooms that I and others
are
excluded from.
Well, I wish they would let us smoke, but they don't.
Yes, well, they certainly won't let some of us within a mile of the place. Let's hear more of this discussion.
This process. A couple other random suggestions. Are we getting the most from our money in this project? Is this project permanently affordable? None of the other ones that we've done have been. Other places, they are permanently affordable. If they're not, why not? Can we get a better deal than we're getting? Are we
permanently affordable? Isn't that an important consideration too, Scott? There is a provision that after 20 years, this whole thing reverts back to Mercy Housing, right? And they can make it market rate housing if they want and do what they want with it?
Well, Mercy has pledged to keep it affordable into perpetuity. But they've never once brought forward a document that they would claim to be signing that would, keep that legal and binding.
I see. So that another part of those who are trying to be in the middle, like Fred here, who is look to both sides to kind of join hands together. Let's keep all the progressives on the same team and so forth. Let's not fight among ourselves. One thing he would look for would be a binding legal commitment from Mercy Housing.
Right.
Let's continue then.
Our dealer and asking them, hey, can you sell us a car? Or are we appointing a committee? The car dealer's running to sell us a car? We need to ask these questions. I know it's easier to do it this way, but, once again, we want to get a good deal for our money and we want to make the best project we can here.
The car dealer... forming the committee to decide whether it's good to sell us the car. Is that a fair metaphor that Fred is making? He is suggesting that your Mercy Housing will be putting together this advisory committee instead of it being elected from the community to decide whether it's a good deal. It does sound questionable.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, would you buy a used sneaker from this man? it's like, I don't know if I would or not. But the whole question is, should anybody, whether they're making, you know, a so-called nonprofit or not, should anybody that's that involved in the project be setting up the citizens committee that oversees the project?
Well, it makes it certainly more convenient and more efficient.
Well, yeah, you can stack the thing with people that are only in favor of it.
Indeed.
Development Advisory Committee that's going to be run under Mercy Housing. I see group number 2, 4, 5, 8, 10 are funded by the City Council. I see Parks and Rec. You know, I don't know Holy Cross Church. I've been unopposed to.
And I guess what Fred is talking about is a list of organizations from whom representatives will be drawn for this Mercy Housing formed and controlled committee. And he's talking about a number of these groups are already funded by City Council, so would be indebted to City Council. And then there, I guess you had noted a number of groups missing. We're going to hear your speech in a moment anyway on that issue.
Good.
Yeah.
Know if the people there, is this part of their, do they go to this church or do they go to some other church? Dominican Hospital? I'm not sure. And do you remember the beach area working group? I hope.
And of course, the reference here is to the fact that the beach area working group, headed by Doug Rand and others, was instrumental in rousing the cry against the Beach South of Laurel plan that ultimately turned the tide and caused three new people to be elected who, in a complete landslide overthrow of the old regime, or so we thought. Is that fair to say?
Well, that was the feeling when the election first happened, yeah. That,
when Fred says, if you remember the Beach Area Working Group, he is saying they can return, perhaps.
Yeah.
In other words, don't pretend that you can proceed in the footsteps of the old council and not get a real response of the same kind, the same kind of reaction, the same kind of community outrage.
Right.
Beach Flats Neighborhood Association. So, you know, I mean, I don't see this as being a substitute for a project area committee. I'm not a lawyer. I can't tell you we need one or not, but I think the intention is to really find out what the people of the community want, and I think that's vital. That's the intention of the law. It's not the letter of the law, and I think that you really need to keep that in mind to not, you know, to me, this is just, I don't know where we get the list of these organizations in the committee. I don't see hardly any input from the people that are actually being affected here. So please think about those items. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Scott Graham. I cannot understand how anyone could read this information and saying it wasn't part of the agenda packet but came in under separate cover from the redevelopment agency.
Now, what are you referring to here, Scott?
Well, in the agenda packet, every week that there's a city council meeting, there's an agenda packet which is given to each of the council members, which each agenda item, there's anywhere from one page of information about it to hundreds of pages of information about that item. And this item we're in front of the city council about right there, the redevelopment agency item, in the agenda packet, they made reference to another document that the council received but wasn't in the packet.
And what you're talking about, of course, is the document that supposedly backs up Keith Sugar's view that they don't need a formal project area advisory board?
Project Area Committee. It's basically three old letters that they used during the Beach South of Laurel hearings to justify not having a project area committee.
So they're kind of trotting out the old guard documents by the bad old council to justify what they're doing?
Right, and then Keith just goes ahead and backs their play on it.
And also it might be noted that those letters are not included for the general public to look at, and so this one might say, questionable process if folks who had strongly opposed the Beach South of Laurel plan voted in the new council might be somewhat concerned if they saw these letters as the documentation, but I note that they were not available in the general agenda packet.
No, I mean, you had to actually, if somebody wanted to see that, they had to go to the city clerk's office and request a copy of it, you know. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but it should, I mean, if it's part of the information explaining a certain item, it should be at least in the window copy during the meeting.
And we're not talking about volumes of documents. You're talking about three letters, right?
Yeah, we're talking about a 6 or 8 page document.
And there are many page longer documents that are actually in the same agenda packet on other topics. So let's hear more.
Three of T. Brent Hawkins' letters from the beach area days. Myself, I couldn't believe those letters back in 98. When those letters came out, I could not believe that anyone could read those letters and not realize that this was a jumping through hoops, around corners, some sort of contortion, twisting of the laws there to protect poor people, twist these laws around in such a way as to say, no, we don't have to do this.
And this, of course, is set up a formal project advisory committee board.
A project area committee, yeah, which is the under redevelopment law is necessary whenever you identify a plan that will primarily relocate low and moderate income people.
Well, who cares about them anyway? Let's continue.
I can't see how anyone could read this. I mean, it seems like the first thing, what Phil just read to you, a substantial number of low-income persons or moderate-income persons or both reside within the project area. What is the project area we're talking about? We're talking about the Dolphin Lee. We're not talking about downtown. We're not talking about the East Side Business District. We're not talking about the entire Beach South of Laurel project. We're talking about a specific project here. I mean, in this, there is no definition. I would like to know what these definitions are supposed to be, but project area, I'd like to know what, under redevelopment law in the state of California, what is a project area? Is it beyond where the dirt's moving? Does it go beyond to some, like I remember there was a hearing one time at the zoning board, and they were putting some church that doesn't even... that doesn't even serve the people of Beach Flats. They put a church in there that doesn't serve the population of that area and relinquish them of their parking requirements. And according to the zoning administrator and the zoning board, the neighborhood goes for 2.5 miles. So the circles are part of the Beach Flats neighborhood.
And I think the point you were making here was that if City Council does break down and set up such a project area committee, that they could frame it so that it covers a much broader area and then dilute the impact of the beach area community, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what this thing that they're letting Mercy set up right now.
But that isn't even a formal thing as required by the law, right? This is
but this is their substitute for it, is to allow the developer to handpick a bunch of people that are in favor of the project.
And they're doing it from a much larger area, you're saying, than is really concerned.
Oh, from all over the town and county.
Right, so what they're doing is they're, in essence, denying real representation in a meaningful way to people in the beach flats.
I mean, they say Dolphin Lee resident, and then in the parentheses they have an S, so there might be more than one resident from that are actually affected by.
You're talking about a list of organizations from which individuals would be drawn, and they include. I guess you're pulling it out now. What organization? Actually, you speak about it on the tape on the text of the. Well, why don't you read it? Go ahead.
Well, the list of groups that are part of Mercy's hand-picked group is Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Familia Center, Resident Representatives. Or single representative from the Dolphin Lee Apartments, Child Development Resource Center, Barrios Unidos, Community Action Board, Seaside Company, Beach Flats Community Gardens, Community Foundation, City Parks and Recreation Department, LNDAR, Holy Cross Church, Santa Cruz City Schools, Planned Parenthood, Dominican Hospital, Beach Area Business Person, Santa Cruz Action Network.
Wow. So in other words, it sounds like there's a lot of conservative pro-project people on there. I'm going to call them conservative in the sense that they favor this existing project. Let me, before you talk more about it, play what you said on the air, because you discuss it further there.
East side all the way to Seabright is part of the Beach Flats neighborhood. So is that what we're trying to construe here, is that the entire town is somehow part of this Beach Flats neighborhood? I don't buy it. I think we need to, if we are really concerned about the people that live in the Dolphin and the Lee, and we really want to do the best by these people, we are almost compelled, whether or not there's a legal requirement, if there's some trick of the law that we can say, oh, we can get out of it this way. If we just like flip this to this page in this book and read right here, we can get out of it. Well, that isn't being sincere. That's being... Okay, just in conclusion, there's a number of people on this list that I don't think belong here. But there's also a number of missing people. The Beach Area Working Group, the Beach Flats Neighbors Association, Housing Now, Tennis Union, Trust, Grandma Sue, Puff, Western Service Workers, Trade Union.
I don't think you're listening. Okay.
As you left the mic, Scott, you said loudly, I don't think you're listening to Keith Sugar, after he had said what? That he would consider your list or something?
Or that I should give my list to Seal Cirillo.
Right. Well, this is where things began to heat up, and we'll hear more of this as we proceed.
Sugar, Ed Davidson. I'm dealing with two items, so I don't know whether I should get 6 minutes, but... two things which may help you in understanding, as much as I don't like to disagree with Phil there or with Scott Grant, there are two problems with the definitions that you're using. One is that the project, relative to the project area committee. The project area committee is for redevelopment projects. In this case, it's the combined redevelopment project area adopted in either 89 or 90 that goes out to the west side and up to Denny's and, you know, everything in between. The whole downtown and the beach and the lower ocean, et cetera. That's all part of the redevelopment project area, and the project area committee would have been appropriate at that time, not for confusing the project with this particular housing project. That's not what the project area is. The project area, for the purpose of project area committees, is the whole redevelopment. Okay, that's one point.
Phil, let the speaker speak.
I want to get back to what's, to me, more important in this whole thing. And for those who were not on the council at the time of the beach area plan, to me, the biggest shortcoming of that planning process was what I would call top-down planning. Decisions were made long before the public ever got involved. And then everything in the process was to justify that decision. And this is the same thing happening on this particular housing project. The housing project is already determined, and we're just trying to do some window dressing to say that there's the public involved in making decisions on this project, on this process. And that's wrong.
Right.
And now, one last point. The redevelopment, relocation, replacement rules started with the federal uniform relocation code, and the state redevelopment law was modified to kind of incorporate the exact same policies as the federal law. On top of that, there is another set of rules which has to do with
Now, I'm going to interrupt here as Ed goes on, because for a lot of people this is so arcane and complex they don't know what to make of it. But what's being argued here is the importance of the real community process before people are displaced from their houses, right?
Well, I mean, part of what Ed's bringing up here is that the part of the failure of the Beach South Laurel thing was that
beach area
they
plan, as it was adopted,
brought the plan out without a public process, then their public process was selling the plan to the public.
Never acted
and they're doing the exact same thing here with this Dolphin Lee project. They're selling the plan. They've already brewed it up somewhere in a back room. There was no public and process involved in the creation of this plan.
Look into those issues.
Hi, my name is Steve Stewart of 223 Woodrow, and sort of all I know is what I read in the papers. I tried to follow this issue earlier by attending the meeting that was held last year in Beach Flats, but can I get like a nod from anybody that just confirms the numbers that are talking about $12 million and essentially we're going to be helping 200 people? Is that basically correct?
Why don't you go ahead and make your comments and then we'll have...
Well, my comment is...
Notice that Keith Sugar interrupts him to say he won't answer him, whereas he did, of course, interrupt Phil Baer. To answer him. So I guess you might say this is a prerogative of the chair, but to me it seems a little too selective. Scott?
Well, there again, it's just a matter of what they're doing. It seems to me that they're just pushing this project. And Keith, when you play the outside tape later, I guess you'll play that later in this program, he questions Roxanne Akistapache's motivations outside. And right now, we're all questioning the city council at large's motivations. Why are they pushing this plan down everyone's throats? Why is there no public process in the evolution and the composition of this plan?
Let's talk about that a little bit before you leave, because I think it has to do with a political situation where Catherine Byers is truly the force behind this plan, because she is the fourth vote here. I think that the new council members, not new anymore, but formerly new, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, though they may have had some doubts about the plan or not be entirely persuaded, their primary political imperative is to hold together their coalition and so support Byers, even though they have doubts about the plan. And the trouble is, every step of the way that they proceed, every step they proceed into this briar patch, into this tar pit, They're saying, well, maybe when we get can it be changed if a new council majority comes in? Will it not appear be even more difficult to change? We have an incoming call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi, Robert. This is Patty Long.
Hey, Patty. Glad you could call. You're, of course, calling on another subject, and this will, of course, give Scott a chance to slip out the door, but I hope he stays a little longer, because I think we're getting hot and heavy, and as we, I don't know if you've been listening to the show.
Oh, okay.
But why don't you talk about what you want to call about, which I think is the death of a person you've known for some years yesterday, and I guess that you know, please talk about that.
I certainly would like to have a little eulogy for my friend Big Tall John, also known as Happy John. And at times there was a club in town called the Bad Boys Club, and John belonged to that. And he was like a troubadour, and he had his own ideals and his own unique way of expressing himself. And I guess first time I met him was up at the Rainbow Gathering in 1984, and my lady Elizabeth told me today that she had met him there also, and that he was putting together a beautiful altar, a little shrine in the woods where people could come and connect with Mother Earth and meditate. So John was like I think a Hayoka.
Hayoka?
Yeah, the Native American clown, in a way, the sacred clown, who could laugh and enjoy life in a very natural, spontaneous way.
Hmm.
And
he was found, I guess we read about him in the paper today, he was found dead, under the Soquel Bridge near the San Lorenzo River?
Yes. I was surprised because I was over in that area about an hour before they found the body. I was at in the jury. I got excused from jury, and I was on the other bank of San Lorenzo about 12:30, and I didn't see any action. I think I don't know all the details, but I asked around a little bit, and it may have been the result of John's partying with friends. John liked to enjoy life by drinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the details of what happened to him at the riverbank. And I just hope and pray there was no foul play.
Well, Patty, we know that last year there were 19 people who died in Santa Cruz, and by the coroner's report I guess Becky Johnson is doing research on this issue, this is like up 50% from previous years. The death rate is rising among homeless people.
Yes, that's true, and that's a great concern. It's very serious because there are people out there who are going to take advantage of homeless people, and they seem to have a hatred within themselves and express it by taking it out on the truly weak and the people that can least very often defend themselves because they don't always have good nutrition available for them or the strength because they have to live outside. I haven't heard any street rumors from a number of people that I spoke to, but I just miss John because he was such a warm and friendly and good-hearted soul. And I used to see him once in a while when he lived on Fern Street down by Harvey West, coming back from the Goodwill Barn and bringing clothing over to the Homeless Resource Center. John was an excellent flea marketeer and had an eye for good antiques. So he had most of the time his own place or his own RV, and he just was a wonderful person, a warm, friendly person. And I guess sometimes his drinking may have got him into some kind of difficulties. But, you know, we all have human weaknesses, and that was his.
Indeed, those who are outside, of course, we get to see all their weaknesses. The rest of ours are hidden by the four walls.
Yeah, right. And so we're going to miss him. We're going to say some prayers and send him light and love.
You know, the Sentinel had a very important story after Chief Belcher was finally forced to divulge the stats on assaults from the last year, and we found that homeless people were about, 20 to 200 times more likely to be hit than people in houses. I'm not quite sure if that's the stat. I know that for housed people last year, it was 1 in 1,000 chance of getting assaulted. For a homeless person, it was 4 to 10% chance of getting assaulted.
Mm,
and
yeah.
That's a very significant, that's great difference in the safety ratio there. And that's counting only reported police assaults. I mean, not police assaults, but reported assaults that were reported to the police department. So,
well, the homeless very often won't report what happens to them to the police department,
so
because they're afraid of them.
The difference is, in fact, much, much wider. There's a much greater chance of homeless people, even than has been admitted. But even the police reported figure is astonishing. And I know that it was used at City Council by the Homeless Issues Task Force. Paul Brindell and Michael Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce was
yeah.
so upset that he emailed in that he wanted to see immediate safe zones and has been lobbying different neighborhood groups. Unfortunately, it looks like his Chamber of Commerce executive board may have kind of put the brakes on it by saying you have to go to different other groups, other neighborhood associations to get their involvement. But maybe that'll be a broader for us later on.
Uh-huh.
But right now, I guess that, I'm recalling the resolution of the Homeless Issues Task Force back in December 6th was suspend the sleeping and camping bans
right.
pending the establishment of safe zones. This is the $10,000 blue ribbon committee that the city council authorized to give them advice, and they, in essence, didn't even address it a month later. They waited a month, and they took the midterm report, and they said nothing about
yeah.
this emergency proposal.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's pretty typical, not only of politicians, but of other organizations like schools. If there's a real problem, one way to avoid it and evade it is to call a commission or call a committee. And that just pushes it to the side and out of earshot and out of eye, out of mind, and then hope hoping that it will just disappear. Robert, you know, and I know that we have been pushing for the end of the camping ban, the sleeping ban, for 15, 16, 20 years. And every politician has just taken an end run. And I was hoping that with this new group coming in, that there would be a resolution that would make the situation for the homeless a humane and moral, would take them away from being second-class citizens who are criminalized by the sleeping ban and the camping ban. Robert, there already is a safe zone. If you have a boat, a sailboat or a yacht, or you eventually can get a berth at the harbor. And there are like 1,500 slips there now, and they said officially there were at least 70 people sleeping on their boats. There's probably a lot more. So the safe zone has already been established. Mm-hmm. There's nothing new. And there certainly should be safe zones away from perhaps residential areas that would upset the people.
Well, I know that Michael Schmidt, and he was the last person I'd ever thought would come forward with this, he specifically sent a memo to the Homeless Issues Task Force on Monday that said he was recommending particularly the safe zone in front at the county parking lot,
yeah,
police station parking lot, and the second and third floors of parking lot number 10, the structure downtown. And he,
yeah,
was prepared to go before the council on Tuesday night and stand up for that immediately. And the Homeless Issues Task Force said that they would support him on that if he could get the endorsement of his executive committee. And as I said, it looks like they have delayed that pending broader support from other neighborhood associations. But if even someone as conservative as Michael Schmidt,
yeah,
can come forward with this, and yet we can't hear a peep out of the city council because they're all in awe of Catherine Byers. I mean, that's how I look at it, because, you know, you have Sugar, Fitzmaurice, and Crone, who are the potential majority, and then you have these people who, I don't know what they're doing, Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez, who don't want any changes. They've entrenched themselves in cement, and the rest of us are entrenched in their we have to bear the burden of their guilt or their shame for what they're doing. But the key vote here has always been Catherine Byers. And she said for years, I'd like to change this law, but I don't have the votes. Of course, the minute she got the votes, she changed her tune,
yeah,
and said, I won't change the law because the community doesn't support it, even though thousands of people signed the petition to repeal the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance.
Yeah, she's been stonewalling it for years. And the council has to take a moral stand because it is a moral issue.
And when we brought this issue to Mayor Sugar, we said to him, look, you may not have the votes now, but if you stand up and have and establish that this is a basic human right, the right to sleep,
of course it is,
then the community is going to eventually get behind you. I mean, Michael Schmidt, for God's sake, would get,
yeah,
behind you.
Yeah.
But if you continue to lay low and hope that Catherine Byers is going to take the lead, you will, of course, cripple this entire movement. And we can't seem to get them to do that. I know that even as we're speaking, these council members, the majority council members, three of them, are meeting in this private backroom meeting with some of their supporters. And I guess the big issue of the moment is the division over the Dolphin Lee and how to do damage control on their latest, again, Byers developed plan to throw out all the Hispanics.
Yeah, well, you know, I talked to Elizabeth about that, and she said she lived in La Bahia, and she got kicked out, you know.
I didn't know.
She said it's the same old plan that Charles Canfield had years and years ago. He's one of the involved parties. And the thing that disturbs me is that they didn't contact the people who were living there and get their input and their suggestion. They're just as intelligent as any member of the city council or SCAN.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly should be consulted and respected, and just to present a fait accompli down at the beach flats and say, here it is, this is what we're going to do, that's the old politics. It doesn't work.
Well, it certainly doesn't work for most of us. It operates on top of us instead of, you know, involving us. and taking input from us. And I know that even SCAN, after a lot of protest from people like Phil Baer and Scott Graham and others, myself, said, well, we aren't going to, you know, single out Dolphin Lee as a project. Here are a bunch of possibilities, but buyers simply reached in. Even Rotkin wouldn't go this far. Rotkin said, well, there are a bunch of projects. Let's give the money to the Beach Flats area, and we'll figure out what to do later. No, said Catherine Byers, Dolphin Lee is my target. And she's the one who really, standing in the shadows, is doing all of this activity. And it's a, some sort of obscene political dynamic that is allowing it to go forward. I mean, I don't think Sugar and Crone really like this proposal that much. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I've asked them to call in, and I'm getting silence. So maybe they do, and I'm wrong. But, you know, the idea of evicting hundreds of people down the road for a proposal that's supposed to be in the name of affordable housing really leaves a pretty bad taste, I think, in the mouths of most of us.
We have never done that before. We have never displaced people in order to put in affordable housing. We have built affordable housing. Not enough, that's true, but we never put people out. And that's my biggest concern, that once you put them out, where are you going to find decent housing in a town where it's less than 1% available occupancy?
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. I mean, students with money are running around. They can't, you know, they're piling up and sleeping illegally and sleeping in vehicles. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the prime arguments against the camping ban or the sleeping sections of the camping ban, is that, you know, you people have no choices but to sleep in their vehicles. Many people you know began here by sleeping in their vehicles.
Of course. You know, I see that over at our school for homeless children, New Horizons School. They pick up children from the vans and old school buses and RVs, and they just can't. They want to work, and they do work, but they can't earn enough money in this town to put down the first, last, and the rent.
Right. Well, you know, we're going to be there. Of course, there are some people who are responding to this. Roxana Kistapache, as I said before, earlier in the program, is on the 16th day of a fast, where she's taking only juices and water.
Yeah.
And, of course, David Silva has organized what he calls a rolling fast,
yes,
an aggressive fast.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
He held a press conference yesterday, and we're going to have him and Robin in the studio. She's a UCSC student who's also going to be doing some serious fasting, talking about this on Sunday. Until then, I encourage you and others to, I'm sure you've done it already, but to call the city council at 420-5020 and tell them, don't evict Hispanic people with no place to go.
Right on.
And, you know, implement the provision of your own homeless issues task force. Suspend the sleeping and camping bans and set up safe zones and do it now.
It's right.
Time for a special session of the city council.
I'm tired of the runarounds, the merry-go-round, and the putting off this very important issue. Homeless people deserve better than that.
We all deserve better.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Robert. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Patty.
Right. Thank you. Good night.
Marching down the street, rolling of the drums and the tramping of the feet, the general salute and the mothers waving we. Here comes the big parade, don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. They all march together, everybody looks the same, so there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Listen for the sound and listen for the noise, listen for the thunder of the marching boys. A few years ago their guns were only toys. Here comes the big parade, don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Medals on their coats and guns in their hands, trained to kill as they're trained to stand. 10,000 ears need only one command. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. One more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same. There's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed. Light the flame. One more parade. Cold hard stares on faces so proud. Kisses from the girls and cheers from the crowd. And the widows from the last war crying through their shrouds. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. Don't be ashamed. Light the flame. One more parade.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the last half hour of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Unfortunately, we're behind schedule as usual. And now I think we're going to get to some of the meat of things, however. Scott has had to go off to the super secret behind closed doors smoky backroom meeting with the council members. The rest of us are excluded from, which they are hopefully going to try to put some... Well, you can't hardly put iron in the spine of the current council members, at least. I have yet to, I hope you can, but I haven't been seeing that as possible. But I'm hoping they'll make it clear that there's now going to be a new force, like a reestablishment of the beach area working group that's going to tell the community no more evictions of this kind. We're not going to let you carry through this plan to throw everybody out on the streets because Catherine Byers and her Mercy Housing friends want this project to go through. That's just got to be stopped. There's got to be real affordable housing based on real public process and not this kind of in-house, behind-closed-doors process that is being essentially that forwarded because the three new council members are afraid to stand up and advocate. If they want to advocate, then the rest of us have to advocate. And if they're going to stick with Catherine Byers' sinking boat, then they'll all sink together. Let's hear some more from this council session from Tuesday.
If this is correct, I got sort of a pretzel logic way of looking at this. We're talking about, essentially, as I understand, it's going to be $12 million in building a community center and housing for 200 people, low income.
And I remind you, this is Stephen Stewart. He is an individual who made a proposal just sort of almost as a joke, and his proposal was that they give away the $12 million they're going to spend on this. If they gave the money to each individual person in this complex, each one could buy his own house. And... because the money, of course, isn't available from the city council but comes from different sources, that couldn't happen. And the city council then used that as an opportunity to ignore all the other criticism about the fact that there should be a project area advisory committee, real public process, consultation with the residents, no behind-the-scenes stuff, but rather an open and above-board approach. You'll hear the council essentially ignoring this, and this provoked rage in the audience. Let's hear more.
In approximately like 60 units or something like that. If we look at it like kind of a different way, why don't we just divide that $12 billion amongst the 60 people or 60 families? We'll give them all $200,000. They could go out and buy market rate housing. They can buy a $400,000 house, put 20% down. They'll still have $320,000 left. They won't have to touch a dime of their income for over 11 years. They'll build equity and will permanently pull these people out of poverty, and we won't have to displace anybody. One of the problems I see is we're going to try to extract people from an area and then stick them somewhere for a little while and then try to replace those people, and there's no guarantee. In fact, at the meeting that we attended in the Beach Flats, people were very skeptical that it was going to happen. So if we're going to blow $12 million, and we're going to give people grants to live somewhere subsidized, why not just make them permanently wealthy? They'll build equity and we'll have happy citizens.
Who would pay the staff?
Question for you, sir.
Yes?
Yeah. What in your mind is the alternative then?
Again, you see Keith Sugar intervening with a question. Again, he's going to set up the guy to show, well, you can't do that. And, of course, the guy isn't making a really serious proposal. What he's doing is showing the vast amount of money that's being spent for a proposal that guarantees no safety for the original people who are being evicted. Of course, it will set up a nice little showcase project for the city council and Mercy Housing and some folks down the road.
That is, I'm completely serious about this. I own the house. I was spending all day working on the house.
Basically, what you're saying makes a certain degree of sense in that we're spending, I don't know if the figure is $12
million. Yeah.
I think it's,
no.
Is that?
Yeah.
No. The project development costs, including the construction costs, come up to $12 million.
And essentially what we're doing is
we're not subsidizing a $12 million project. There is some gap in there, which we do not know at the moment because we don't know what the project is, we don't know what the construction costs are, we don't know what the land acquisition costs are. When we get all of that, we will then run the developer, we'll be running financial pro formas, which will show the tenants will be paying 30% of their income, and there will be a gap between debt service and their income. So.
This is a bunch of gobbledygook from Cecil Cirillo. I believe that's Cecil Cirillo or some staff person. Of course, what she's saying is that, you know, there'll be the city doesn't fund all of it, but the reality is that, you know, there's a great chunk of money here involved.
Okay, there. I really intended this to be sort of a joke, Mayor. You know, I wasn't really serious, but if you use a little pretzel logic like that, it almost sounds plausible, doesn't it?
My question is, how can we use that $12 million to house more people?
You're not housing any more people. You're taking the exact same number of people out, displacing them somewhere. No, and then you're going to open up those 60 units. Because those 60 units are going to, all you have to do is red tag them.
Don't ask the question if you don't want the answer.
People be quiet for a second to be chance to speak. We don't spend $12 million.
This is Mike Rodkin.
The project gets put together with money that comes from tax breaks for people who invest in the project. It comes together with money that comes from the city, from funds that are limited in terms of how we can spend it. We don't have the right to give this money away to people. Some of the federal money restrains on it. Some of the money, I understand what your point was. There's a certain absurdity in the way in which affordable housing gets constructed in this society. But we
that,
just
that was
clear to the public. It's not like we're sitting on $12 million. What should we do with it and give people housing? We're sitting on a much smaller increment of money, which will help make the project go. Without our participation in it, the project doesn't happen. But we don't have a bank account of $12 million.
Can I
now,
make
that's what's misleading about the story.
I'd like to make one more clarification for you. The residents who are there now are paying exceedingly more than 30% of their income. The development that they'll be moving into, they will only be paying 30% of their income. There's a major distinction there.
There's a statement that is made. I believe it's Cecil Cirillo, but it's certainly the staff person. Again, I'm not quite clear who's sitting over there. 30% of the income is going to be paid by residents who are moving into the new project, but more than 30% is being paid now. That's nice for those who eventually get this kind of housing, but it's not going to be the same people because they're going to have to survive as this project is, their current housing is destroyed, given the current rents in Santa Cruz on completely insufficient relocation funds. And in a situation where they won't get money because they're immigrants, in a situation because they won't get money because they won't get any guaranteed spot coming back in because the federal law, if Scott Graham is correct, as he sees it, makes it open to everybody in the country if the same situation applies as applied to Neri Lagoon. Council answers none of these questions, and this, of course, enrages the audience. Let's hear more.
How do you know how much of their income?
Yes, hold on, Bill. Hold on. Oh, okay. We can step it offline. All right. Is there anyone else that wishes to address us on this issue? Please.
You used some of my time for your question.
Yeah,
right?
I really did.
Oh, okay. Apparently not.
Why must I keep coming back here? I don't want to see you any more than you want to see me. But here I am yet again. The list of people that are on the, and I never, project area committee or should be, they're the wrong people, and you know it. And they're not representational of the people that live in the beach flats. What they are representational of, which is a real coinky dinky, is people who support what you're doing.
Yes.
How'd that happen? Well, lucky for you. I know it was a total accident, but, you know, this is a real important thing that you're doing. And it's every step of the way you have these proposals have sold us out every step of the way. I mean, we got past a really hard city council when we won at least some progress in this manner, and it's just gone backwards. It's just going backwards slowly. So, I mean, for my money, I just want you to know that I will... Oh, by the way, I did want to say something tonight. I want you to start practicing your eminent domain capabilities by eminent domaining Rittenhouse. I don't believe you'll do it. The Downtown Businessmen's Association said they will not stand...
Wait a second.
I understand for the
plan... I want you to stick to the subject that's in front of us. It's not the...
Eminent domain is part of the subject. Keith, please don't censor what I'm saying.
Well, I want you to stay on the topic.
I am on the topic.
So go ahead.
Because you're going to have to eminent domain property to do this project. If you can't see the connection, I can help you. But
you may not have to, by the way.
Well, I'm just saying that the Downtown Businessmen's Association said they won't stand for it on mic, on the news. So I would like to see, other than the Beach Flats landlords, which have been maligned ever since day one, since the day I got involved with this, I want to see you eminent domain somebody else first. Prove that you would do it. I think you will only do it for the Beach Flats.
Councilmember Robert Norris, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The woman who just spoke to you for the community out there is Roxana Kispapache, who's been on a two-week fast because of the City Council's refusal to deal with affordable housing in the terms of shelter or not being arrested for sleeping of homeless people. Here, what's happening for the community's benefit, since I don't believe the council is paying much attention to what I have to say, the council has piled on behind the Byers-Rotkin demolition plan from last year. This is the beach area, the redevelopment plan. In another form, we have a situation where the staff is essentially writing the rules here, and everyone else is sort of piling on behind. And I'm naive, I'm not an expert, I haven't been consulted. But watching the lack of public process, that is really the key factor here, the lack of real public process, not the show of seven council members sitting around a dais, giving everybody 3 minutes, but real inquiry into what the residents of this area want, what the community wants, what the real options are. I mean, eminent domaining is a possibility. Why not eminent domain Canfield's property? He's got plenty of property over there that's fallen into disrepair. That hasn't been considered in any significant way. Instead, you've taken a prearranged agenda and are proceeding with it step by step. And the most cynical and frightening thing about this is that the target of this is a community of people who helped elect this city council by risking their residency, their legal status here, by risking their livelihood, their very beings to be here, so that you guys could get on the basis of opposing the beach flats. The Beach Area Working Group, opposing the Third Street redevelopment, the Canfield Company takeover. Now what's happening is these people are paying the price. Yes. They're going to be evicted because a favored sole source developer, Mercy Housing, has your ear and nobody else does. Every single speaker tonight says stop. You going to stop? No, they're not going to stop, community. And the reason they're not going to stop is they have to hear from the public. They have to hear from the public out there that tells them you can't go ahead with the same old plans. You have to stand back, stop evicting Hispanic people who will not have affordable housing when this is over, will not be able to afford it in spite of the stats you just heard from Seal Cirillo. They won't be anywhere in the area when this comes back. There is no way. That's what generally has been conceded by people who honestly looked at the situation, even for those who were considering earlier redevelopment plans, a lesser development. A lesser eviction, in a sense, that was happening at last autumn. So it's the community that really has to do something out there, folks, and that's what I think you have to speak to the city council and tell them to stop. Thank you.
And this is where the explosion comes for those of you who read the Santa Cruz Sentinel article the next day.
Saying, I never thought I'd see the day when I'd see Robert Norris shilling for a slumlord.
What slumlord? What slumlord?
If it's necessary,
what slumlord?
Get these people in conditions where they're living in conditions that are appropriate and dignified, and I'm just absolutely.
You're going to put them up while this is happening? You're going to put them up while this is happening, Keith?
All right.
Defamation.
Yeah. Well,
Well, I'm going to respond to a few of the things. First of all, Robert's right. I'm not going to stop. This community is going to be destroyed by the free market. People are being
abused. You're going to destroy it.
Phil, you know, that's enough. All right, the next person that goes out of order, I'm going to have to ask them to leave so that we can get through this agenda. I think the response is indicative of what's going on, actually. They are being evicted. They're being evicted by the free market.
They are not.
All right, Phil, can you please step outside?
They are not being evicted.
I respect your position, but can you please step outside?
They are not being evicted, Tim. That's a bold-faced lie.
Okay, Phil, thanks. The rest of the hotel is empty. And those people were rudely evicted.
By Seaside Company.
Better arrest them.
In any case, I have no desire to malign the Peach Flatland.
At this point, Phil Bear was ordered from the room, and he left, but then came back in a bit later.
But what we want to do is preserve this
Councilmember Fitzmaurice
and
speaking.
When we talk about spending $5 million or something, it's a huge investment for this community. And the notion is not whether we can give people $200,000 to go move somewhere else. The notion is whether we're going to preserve this community or not. I don't understand. I did not interrupt anyone when they came to the microphone. I was extremely brief when the last item came up on here. I do not interrupt people when they speak. So please don't interrupt me. This is very difficult for you out there, and I realize that. It's difficult for us as well, because every issue has valid feelings, emotions on every side of it.
Of course, the public has to interrupt this process. Otherwise, a lot of people are going to get evicted. That's the point. And Fitzmaurice's call for decorum as this eviction proceeds is disingenuous. Plus, you'll notice all of them are now going to focus their fire on this essentially jokey proposal that they give money to the Hispanic residents so they can build their own houses. Rather, the concern has been that the city council is subverting process by ignoring even the law, which requires there to be a real project area advisory committee. Instead, Sugar has found a loophole in the law. They don't have to set up that advisory committee. They can let Mercy Housing do the setting up. And this produces even more anger.
I certainly have respect for you. I have respect for all those people and their feelings and their thoughts on this issue. But you need to listen to mine as well. So I don't want to divide $12 million 60 ways and move everybody out of the neighborhood. I don't. In fact, that's not the goal of this at all. A lot of other things have been addressed one way and another. When we looked at the possibilities of relocation, our major question was, is it 100%? You know, is it 100%? Are we responding to the needs of the people in the area 100% or not? That's our goal. And we told them that was our goal. And the people in this room, many people in this room, and there aren't that many people in this room protesting it. But there are many people at home listening, perhaps, and other people that need to be assured that our intention, as we look at preserving this community, is to preserve 100% of this community. I think it's the definition of what we want the city to be for the next 50 years, what we're working on right now. We're not, you know, we can let it become a middle-class, upper-middle-class neighborhood city, and that will happen as a result of the way that things go forward in this community, or we can invest in trying to preserve this community. And when people spoke to the project area committee, I might as well make my the Beach Flats affordable housing that comes to this advisory committee through Mercy Charities. Yes, they chose people who were going to be supportive of this project. That's exactly what the goal of an advisory committee for the project is. I don't think anybody who's saying somehow that they're going to give it a ringing endorsement. I think what they're going to do is try to make sure that they do a reasonable job in doing the project and responding to the needs of the community, responding to whatever the expressed will is of this particular group. And the numbers that were mentioned of people that people don't think should be involved in this advisory committee include the Familia Center, Barrios Unidos, Beach Flats Community Garden, and the City Parks and Recreation. I find that's astounding bad. It's astounding bad faith to name those numbers to some invisible public out there and say that these people are not reasonable participants in advising this particular project. I believe they are more than reasonable participants in advising this particular project.
the fact that we may need to come to some...
You're listening to Councilmember Fitzmaurice on Tuesday night defending the Dolphin Lee eviction of Hispanics. He, of course, would call it relocation and creation of affordable housing. But, of course, the people that are going to get evicted won't get back in. That's the bottom line. He talks about the preservation of community, but what community is he talking about, of course? If the people who are going to be currently evicted will not be able to resume their residency, that clearly he's talking about a new community, a different community. He talks about you don't need to have representation from those people who are being evicted. What you need are people who support the project of evicting them. It's hard to understand what this guy is talking about.
Public meeting where people can vent and express their opposition to this particular project is fine with me. But the point is, I am not opposed to this project. I am not opposed to this project. And I believe that it's going to be one of the defined projects for this community in the next 50 years. And I'm astounded sometimes by people that essentially believe that people ought to be scattered across the community, given $200,000 to move to wherever they can live, and not understand the sort of the necessary center of mass of that particular community, how that community is going to survive in the foreseeable future.
Which was not, of course, what people were asking for. So he's not addressing the concerns of any of the people who were speaking.
I think we need to ask staff to come back with a work plan for this relocation committee, with understanding what its relationship is to the advisory group that's being proposed.
And rather than go into the details of what actually, I think they ended up sort of suggesting that the advisory committee look into relocation. I do not have the action agenda here at the moment. Scott left and is now hopefully duking it out with Fitzmaurice and his co-council members on the city council. What I do have, and what I'm going to begin to play for you now, and I'm not going to have time to finish it, I apologize, is the debate that happened after city council recessed, and they voted again unanimously, including Chris Crone, including Keith Sugar, including Tim Fitzmaurice, including Catherine Byers, the great liberals, to press forward with this plan, which is, again, fundamentally a juggernaut to evict the current residents, raise the building, give them some relocation money, and set up a little affordable housing project, which will take about the same number of people that are there now, though admittedly in somewhat better quarters, without consulting the people who are there, without considering alternative plans that could provide, let's say, additional housing, like Canfield property that's currently barren or Canfield housing that's currently completely unused. None of that is being considered. That because the staff and Mercy Housing had this plan on the shelf, which Byers whipped out, apparently with support from SCAN heavyweights like Bernice Belton, if Scott Graham is to be believed. Outside, this provoked anger. The first 5 or 10 minutes of the conversation is missing from this tape, and I apologize for that. But we do have some pretty heavy debate going on, and let's hear it now. I should say that this whole conversation began as Keith Sugar walked out of the building saying to Phil Baer and Scott Graham, "Fuck you and the horse you rode in on." That's a quote from Scott Graham. I didn't hear it, but frankly, I tend to believe Scott, and I don't think he'd say that if it wasn't said. And there's nothing wrong with saying "fuck you and the horse you rode in on." I say it too. It indicates the passion the mayor had, and he then spent 20, 25 minutes arguing with folks out front in what I believe was a damage control process, and he succeeded briefly, but I think that we're going to find on Sunday when we hear more of this, and our show comes back Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning from 11 to 1:30, that he did not succeed in buying off the critics or in staving off critics like Phil Baer, whose letter appeared today's Sentinel, essentially clarifying the issue. The problem with a lot of this is the issues are so kind of arcane, complicated, they sound like you don't know all the details, it sounds very involved. Just remember the bottom line. Evicting hundreds of low-income Hispanic people under the name of affordable housing who will not be able to get back in. That's the key.
The fox to guard the chicken house.
First of all, it's a non-profit developer, which makes a big difference with me, Phil. It makes a big difference.
Are
that
you
it's a
that naive, or are you just pretending to be?
I guess I'm
naive.
Yeah,
really.
Really.
I'm sorry.
Non-profit.
we're going to interrupt this briefly because we do have a caller from a woman who is one of those folks out there in her vehicle. Eleanor. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, Robert. Going to make it quick. Thank you so much for interrupting, letting me on. I've got one thing to say to everybody out there. Please, listen. You need a judge. They're not going to stop. They're going
to
do it.
Actually, that's what Phil Baer is planning to do, is take this matter to the courts.
Wonderful. Congratulations, Phil. They can't keep a good man down.
Hey, thanks a lot.
God bless you all. And you too. Robert.
Yes.
Go, tell him to go to federal court. Go over the hill. Go to federal court. There's federal money involved. They'll hear it.
All right. Well, come back again on Sunday. We'll talk more about
this. Okay. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And continuing with the brouhaha outside City Council. These voices you're going to be hearing are those of Phil Baer, Mayor Sugar, Scott Graham, Roxana Kistapache, and others.
What Mercy's setting up is a sham. I don't know.
Wait a second.
That.
Hold on a second. Do you guys wait? Let me ask a question. Do you guys object to the project?
Yes.
Or do
yes.
you object to the developer?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I
would suggest that you object to the project, and so regardless of who the developer would be, I like that. Regardless of who the developer would be, you'd be raising the same objections.
If you opened
yes.
this up to a competitive bidding process to see who the developer would be, I would be greatly.
Well, you're bullshit, Phil. You're fooling me. You'd still be totally opposed. Thank
why you hand it over to a sole source thing?
Notice that Sugar is refusing to say he will open it up to other developers, but rather their chosen developer, Mercy Housing, will be the people who are, in fact, doing the developing.
About it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
I
not us that handed it over
about
to the sole
it, but I'm skeptical
thing,
about any process that just goes
to
directly
source.
To your chummy.
Council. We can
pull
the whole thing back,
no.
this go back to
no.
square one,
this
and lose all this time.
This
lose a whole year of work. Is that what you want?
You
want
put a whole year of work trying to get some public support, and you've got zero public support. I call it a failed year.
I think what we really disagree on is you don't believe the people that are living under substandard conditions. I do. And
how
I'm not going to protect.
But why isn't the Department of Building Inspections confirm your appraisal?
Plenty of people going out there and looking at the fact that there's a substandard condition.
Almost every rental that I looked at this past summer was substandard. Everyone, everywhere in this town. So don't use that as an excuse.
And if it's substandard, why don't you call Richard?
We've been using some of those substandard facilities as a part of another of the same project.
I want to ask.
That's what I don't understand what you're saying.
If it's substandard, tell Richard Schubendorf. He'll be on it like flies on shit.
Roxanne is talking, Phil.
You've been saying for a year now that there's no project. You told us in the Beach Flats trailer, when every resident there asked about the Dolphin Lee project, you said you never heard of such a thing. There wasn't any such thing.
No, I heard of the Dolphin Lee at that point, and they didn't say that.
You both said that,
no.
that there was no such thing. Phil, am I telling the truth?
That's revisionist.
If the buildings are substandard, there is a process. You tell Richard Stubendorf, he'll be on it tomorrow, and they'll be red-tagged.
It's your opinion that the Dolphin Lee... Is suitable housing for people to raise their...
Totally
hold on. I got a question for you. Are you telling me that the Dolphin Lee is an appropriate place to raise kids?
Yes.
I'm saying it's the only place in this town where those particular human beings are able to live. And if you take that from them, they'll be out of this.
That's what we disagree on,
Phil. It's better than a dump in Tijuana where there's people raising their kids right now, Keith. Some of these people came from dumps in Mexico City.
So you're saying something notch above a dumpster is okay? I disagree.
Notch above a dumpster. You have no first-hand information about those housing conditions.
I've got first-hand information from the city. I've got first-hand information from tenants.
You don't have it from Richard Stubendorf.
I've got information from tenants that were afraid to come forward. I've got all kinds of information indicating that it is not an appropriate place.
Is that where you ask them if they'd like better housing?
First meeting at Peach Flats.
Why isn't Stubendorf? This is a building inspection issue. If there's substandard conditions, the process has to do with the Department of Building Inspections, Linda Garner, Target Code Enforcement Officer, Richard Stubendorf. That's how you approach it. Those folks don't have any problems with that housing.
Right.
You're saying that you have higher standards than your own Department of Building Inspections?
Phil, I'll talk to them. I'll talk to the building inspectors and ask them about that.
Well, isn't it a little late to be doing that? You've already labeled the whole thing as slumlords renting out substandard housing.
Okay, it is substandard because you don't necessarily, you don't have authority to close down a project simply because the conditions aren't suitable. All right, there's a very rigid. No. What you're saying is that the
standard,
basically, I am still saying substandard.
If it's substandard, you have authority.
Yeah, you're saying these people aren't entitled to a better place to live.
No,
until they're
I'm
in the
saying
dumpster.
If it's
that's
substandard, you do have the authority to shut it down. And you would have if it had been substandard. Linda Garner is on that neighborhood like glue. If there were substandard housing conditions, as the law identifies substandard housing conditions, she would have been on it. You're opposing some sort of middle-class jivey, three-quarter-acre plot. Yeah, yes. Right. You're not talking about the legal definition of substandard. You're not talking about a viable opportunity for replacement housing for these people.
Yeah, yeah,
this
talking
is the
about
only
the legal definition of substandard. There's a different definition for when you're violating 1942 of the Civil Code, which provides for the basic things that a house has to have, and it's a different level at which the city will shut it down. The city cannot shut it down if it's simply violating 1942. There have to be other criteria. Let me finish.
You used the term substandard.
I'm using the state's definition of substandard. No. Go and read Civil Code Section 1942.
I have.
And Civil Code Section 1942 specifies when a building is substandard.
Yeah.
That you have to go even lower for the building department to shut it down. So you're using a bunch of doublespeak and your own gobbledygook to thwart our efforts to get these people out of a bad situation.
You can shut the thing down or you can't. If you can, do. If you can't, stop rattling
stop
the saber.
So we should shut it down and kick these people out into the streets before
that's what
we have
doing anyway.
Before we have a relocation advisory committee that is going to be set up to ensure these people
committee.
Get a
you
place
think that relocation
during
advisory committee
the construction of the project.
Yeah, and you're telling me that you're going to assure that those people get replacement housing permanently affordable. Affordable before this project began.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's a lie.
Roxanne, I can say that you know, Roxanne, you're the mastermind of lies. When you go up there and spread all of this misinformation, don't give me this gobbledygook about lies, Roxanne.
Right.
You know, you can shoot straight if your life depended on it.
Oh, really, Keith?
Yeah, really,
and
Roxanne.
And you're Cupid's little quiver.
No,
huh?
And you're just a little angel yourself flittering about.
The person who judges what is substandard and yet won't follow the legally approved process for addressing those conditions.
There is
it's
no
just
legally
going to go
approved
in
there, no.
With your superior intellect
no, I'm
and
going
say
by 1942,
they are
Phil.
Substandard.
Section 1942.
Yes.
Read it. That's what the what problem is? With Dolphin Lee is.
What?
I'm not going to quote it. I can't quote it.
What is the problem? Okay,
because I can't.
No, paraphrase it. Paraphrase it.
Okay, it's got to have. Yeah, it's. All right.
Yeah,
you know. No, give the man a chance.
No,
if there's something here, spill it.
Right, right.
Teach us, Keith. Come
if
on,
you're not
going to
give
us.
Me.
No, let him narb. Let him say. If there's something
what
here, say it.
1942 provides that you've got to have adequate plumbing, adequate electricity, adequate lighting, adequate heating, adequate windows, adequate weather stripping, adequate weatherproofing, and a whole list of other discreetly specified criteria. Okay.
Or what?
And people have. Or the people in the place can sue the landlord to retain some rent or to repair and fix it at the landlord's expense.
Okay.
That,
unfortunately, is all we have time for. But we do have a caller who wants to point out an additional consideration that nobody has mentioned. We're on the air here with Laura Tuck.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. So I've been trying to get into subsidized housing for 2 years now, and I don't know how many of those people who are evicted or even if they're able to survive the amount of time that it takes before those units become available, are going to qualify. Because in order to qualify for most subsidized housing, and I believe probably all of Mercy Housing subsidized housing, you need to have good credit, no past evictions, and no criminal record. So, and I just had one housing unit call up a past landlord of mine and ask whether I was a good mother or not, which I thought was really unqualified. You know, I mean, I just don't know how many of these people are even going to qualify if they have a criminal record, a past eviction, or bad credit.
So, in other words, you're pointing out that not only may not be possible because federal law will not allow that particular group to move back in, not only might not be possible because they're illegal immigrants, they don't have their documents in order, some of these folks,
yeah.
But you're saying that there are these additional hurdles that they have to also get past.
Right.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
And that's about it for Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides today. We apologize that we didn't finish the really a key document, the tape of Mayor Sugar duking it out front with his critics.
You'll be back on Sunday at 11 with
far more time than you have now.
Exactly. Thank you for being with us. And between shows, 423-HUFF is a number to call if you've got information on this or opinions, thoughts, requests, desires, or anything else. Thanks for being with us.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, where...